This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. It's that time of month again when we analyze the latest issues dominating the U.S. political landscape. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel, and the biggest political bombshell in recent days, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy retires, giving U.S. President Donald Trump the opportunity to choose yet another justice and potentially shape the ideological direction of the court for a generation to come. As the crucial swing vote on the 9-member court, Justice Kennedy sometimes voted with the 4 conservative justices, sometimes with the 4 more liberal justices. Kennedy supported Roe v. Wade, the seminal 1973 decision upholding legalized abortion. However, per his promises during the 2016 election campaign, President Trump is likely to choose a solidly conservative nominee. He is interviewing judges from a list compiled by the Federalist Society. That's an organization of conservatives and libertarians seeking reform of the current American legal system in accordance with a textualist or originalist interpretation of the U.S. Constitution. President Trump plans to announce his nominee next week. Democrats are up in arms over Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's intention to hold confirmation hearings, possibly as soon as August, well before the November midterm elections. McConnell blocked former President Obama from filling an open Supreme Court seat before the 2016 elections, but Democrats have little sway as long as Republicans control the Senate. And wait, there's more. The Supreme Court upholds the latest iteration of President Trump's travel ban, which indefinitely suspends the issuance of immigrant and non-immigrant visas to applicants from the Muslim-majority countries of Libya, Iran, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen, plus Venezuela and North Korea. Immigration legislation fails yet again in the Republican-controlled Congress. President Trump doubles down on his so-called zero-tolerance immigration policy, even as he issues an executive order to stop the controversial separation of children from their parents at the U.S.-Mexico border. Tariffs on U.S. allies strain economic and political ties. Yet, after the forthcoming NATO summit in July, President Trump agrees to meet one-on-one with Russian President Vladimir Putin, a foreign adversary who is accused by U.S. intelligence agencies of directing a disinformation campaign against Democrat Hillary Clinton and in favor of Donald Trump in the 2016 presidential elections. And of course, we'll preview the outlook for Democrats and Republicans in the crucial November midterm elections. With us to discuss the tumultuous U.S. political landscape are our two veteran political analysts. John Fortier is a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and that's a think tank here in Washington, and Jim Kessler. He's senior vice president for policy at Third Way, a think tank also here in Washington, and both regulars join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
First to you, John Fortier. We're going to look at the bombshell, the fact that Justice Kennedy is stepping down. Talk about the significance of this nomination, of his retirement, what it means. Why is it so consequential? What's at stake?
Well, the court has been narrowly divided for a while. And, of course, both sides see the court as the institution that might tip policy on a number of very important issues. Anthony Kennedy was more broadly on the conservative side. There is a 5-4 conservative majority, but he was the most common swing vote, the most likely to vote with the Democratic appointees. On some very big issues in the past, his legacy includes voting on same-sex marriage, which tipped in the direction with the 4 Democratic nominees and Kennedy ruling in that direction. So both sides are worked up about this. The replacement of Anthony Kennedy by a more consistently conservative justice, Republicans see as more likely to move the court in their direction. And I think that's true, but again, I would emphasize that Kennedy was broadly on the conservative side. And this term, for example, the 5-4 decisions, he was on the conservative side on all of them. So it would be a more solid conservative majority likely if Republicans get their nominee through, which I expect will happen. But the real battle, I think, would be if a liberal justice or a conservative justice stepped down and the balance might tip much more significantly.
Jim Kessler, how do you see the significance of Kennedy's retirement and his possible replacement with a more conservative justice?
It's very significant. So the court right now is kind of right. It's going to be very right, politically right. And then you have to look at this in the context of how the nominee process for the court has fallen apart in the last few years. Merrick Garland was the choice of Barack Obama to be the Supreme Court justice when there was a vacancy towards the end of his presidency. Mitch McConnell refused to put that nominee up for vote. He would have definitely passed. And, you know, so now we have a situation where Democrats feel like they've been cheated out of a Supreme Court justice. Just on the issues, kind of how it affects people, Roe v. Wade, which is the decision in 1973 that makes abortion a right in this country, it's hanging on by a thread. It's very possible that Roe v. Wade will be overthrown with the next Supreme Court justice. So pretty serious issues at play.
Indeed. Back to you, John Fortier. Certainly politics does play a role, even in the highest court of the land. As Jim Kessler said, a number of hard-won rights for women, minorities, could possibly be overturned if a conservative justice is confirmed. Talk about the dilemma for both Republicans and Democrats. Many are saying that two Republican senators, that is, Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski, who tend to support abortion rights, could be very critical in the upcoming confirmation hearings, that perhaps a confirmation would turn on their votes, because the Democrats, even if everyone votes against the nominee, still cannot overturn despite the razor-thin majority that the Republicans hold. And then the Democrats may also be in trouble, that is, some Democratic senators in what we call red states in the upcoming elections, if they're seen as voting against President Trump's nominee, perhaps some votes from conservative voters in their states who could vote for them might not vote for them. So it's quite dicey.
Well, it's interesting. Over the years, I think, especially going back to the Earl Warren Supreme Court, Republicans were the ones most worried about an activist Supreme Court. And there was, I think, more motivation for their voters to get out and vote on some of those issues. You know, as the balance has shifted on the court, I think there's certainly energy on both sides. You do see that. And the parties are more divided on issues like abortion than they were. There are fewer and fewer pro-life Democrats and fewer pro-choice Republicans. So I think you've laid it out right that there are a couple of Republican pro-choice female senators who are wavering a bit. I guess I expect probably they will end up voting for the nominee, whoever that is. And a few Trump, deep red Trump state senators who did vote, for example, for the earlier nomination of Justice Gorsuch. Three Democrats did vote for that nomination. They are up for election. Murkowski and Collins are not up for election. And I expect that some of them will probably end up supporting the nomination. So I think the Republicans have a very strong chance of getting this nomination through the Senate. But in theory, if two Republicans defected, they wouldn't. But it looks like maybe some Democrats will defect in the direction.
Back to you, Jim Kessler. How does this affect the midterms for the Democrats, this nomination and possible confirmation? As I said earlier, for Democratic senators in red states, will they be howled and somehow boycotted by Democratic voters if they don't vote against the nominee, whoever he or she may be? Don't forget, as you said earlier, abortion rights may be at risk. Mr. Trump, although he said there is no litmus test in his interview process, he said during the campaign that he would appoint justices that would overturn Roe v. Wade. So we're at a very important juncture here for the court and for Democrats as well.
Yeah, this is a dicey vote for about four or five Democratic senators that are up for re-election, that are in states that were overwhelmingly won by Donald Trump. There are five Democrats who are running for re-election in states that Donald Trump won by 18 points or more. So this is a tough vote for all of them. There are kind of two types of anti-Trump voters out there. There are those that are the resistance, like oppose him every single time. And there are those that say, I want you to be a check on Trump. Be with him when he's doing things right, but, you know, I don't want a rubber stamp Republican there. Most of the Democratic voters in these red states, they are not resistance Democrats. They are be a check on Trump. But it's still dicey for them because it could dampen some turnout there. At the same time, the reason why we have the Affordable Care Act, universal health care in this country, is because of these Democratic senators. In the end, I don't think it'll hurt these senators, but for them, this is a tricky vote.
Well, let's turn now to the travel ban, which was upheld by the current Supreme Court. John Fortier, talk about the significance. You know, some critics say that this travel ban is really a Muslim ban by another name, or even an Iran ban. Venezuela, North Korea also on the list, have very few people coming to this country. So they see this as a kind of a ruse, and the Supreme Court, because they narrowly decided in favor of presidential power to regulate immigration, they voted to uphold this.
I guess I'd like to put this in the context of several immigration-related issues that we have on the table. Certainly, this travel ban, while opposed by a number of people, is a third iteration of an earlier travel ban. The court was harder, and the lower courts were harder on the first, and this has been a refinement and a cutting back of a sort. And so I'm not sure if the American people are as focused on this. I'm certainly there are plenty of resistance Democrats who are upset about this. But in the news recently, we've also had the issue of the separation of children from families and debate in the House of Representatives about maybe a kind of reform package that might get done. What I will say is Donald Trump has pushed red hot buttons on this. He's done this from the beginning. I think his position is broadly the same. It's to be very skeptical of illegal immigration in a number of different ways. On the separation of children from families, we had a red hot couple weeks where it looked like this was a particularly bad issue for Republicans. And I think on paper, 80% of people say, you shouldn't separate families from children. But you look at the president's numbers and they didn't change at all. And I think I wouldn't say we have an equality or of views on both sides on immigration, but I think, it's a more complicated issue. I think when people are asked other questions about, what to do about people coming and families coming illegally, whether they should all be sent back together, they're broadly for a kind of security. So the president, as much as he is controversial on this and has probably energized his voters and energized people against them, the numbers didn't move at all. And so I think we're likely to see the same set of skirmishes play out in a number of other issues that the president, while controversial, feels like he is supporting members of his base and, yes, losing some on the other side, but not ultimately losing on this issue the way that sometimes the press says he is.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, for your take on the upholding of the travel ban. And again, just to play the devil's advocate, national security experts said that even though the rationale for the travel ban was for national security, it really doesn't fly because so many Muslim countries in particular who would be considered a security threat like Pakistan or Saudi Arabia or even Egypt aren't even on the list. So countries that we have a political or countries with which the United States has major problems such as Iran, and there are so many immigrants here, upstanding American citizens who are being singled out. So what is your take on what message this sends?
So I do think this is some version of a Muslim ban. We can't do that in this country, but, he basically picked countries that are Islamic countries. Everything Donald Trump does is designed to divide people. That is his strategy. That is unique among any president I can recall in my lifetime. He thinks that works for him. I agree with John. It didn't really affect his polling numbers that much. But I would say this, his approval rating has been in a narrow band of between 38% and 44% for his entire presidency. And those are all losing numbers. And I've never seen a president who has not been able to break out of this a narrow band and be seemingly popular. So immigration is an issue that the hard right, Republican right, thinks works for them well. I do think it was the key issue that elected Donald Trump. Not sure it's going to play as well in these midterm elections. Feel that Republicans have gone too far on this, especially the separation of children from their parents. But, the issue plays very differently in different parts of the country.
We'll have more in the midterms in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard. He's Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. We're discussing the impact of Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy's retirement and the opportunity for President Trump to reshape the ideological balance of the highest court, among other issues. And this is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Now, here's a shout out to Fagbuesa Oluwole Michael from Ekiti State, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or be sure to like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page, Carol Castiel VOA. We're back to you, John Fortier, to talk about the politics of all this, immigration, Supreme Court. That's all going to play into the midterm elections. We just witnessed recently in New York an upset by a so-called political neophyte, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a young woman, barely 28 years old, replaced the number 4-ranked House Democrat, Joe Crowley, who was being groomed, apparently, perhaps even, to, if not replace Nancy Pelosi, the current minority leader in the House of Representatives, but at least move himself up on the leadership ladder. What does that say? Is this a one-off, you think, or do we, you know, derive a message from that?
Well, I think there are a number of things that went into this win. It was a very surprising win. People did not see it coming. Certainly, there is energy on the progressive side of the Democratic Party, and that energy is broadly good for Democrats, broadly good in the midterm elections. But, you know, in some of these primary elections, arguably, you might elect candidates who are maybe too progressive. It is not the case in this district. This is a very Democratic district. She will win easily in the general election and be a congresswoman in the next Congress. But it does show, like, you know, that there is power and motivation for somebody who is more progressive from the outside. Also, you see, this is a district that has changed dramatically. Is a district that was, you know, more traditionally a white working class district at one point, and is now a heavily Hispanic district, heavily minority district, and she appealed to that. She's a young person as well. So it is a lesson for some leaders that they do have to pay much more attention to their districts, and things are changing in an underlying way. But, you know, I'm not sure that this recipe is going to be played out all across the country, other than, you know, that there will be some energy with some progressive candidates in various places that will help them at least do better in some of these races.
Let me ask you about what this says, or rather these issues that we've talked about, SCOTUS, the Supreme Court justice, as well as immigration. Will this rev up the Republicans in the midterms, who were seen as on a back foot in a sense vis-a-vis the Democrats? Or if in fact the nominee by President Trump is confirmed before the midterms, will they have a reason maybe just to stay home because they got what they really wanted? How's this going to affect Republicans?
Well, broadly speaking, midterm elections, the out party, the party out of the White House, really is much more motivated. And I think in this case, perhaps even more so. I mean, the polling numbers show that Democrats really don't like Donald Trump. They're ready to get out and vote against him. Now, there are some additional poll numbers that show Republicans are actually more vote motivated than they have been in traditional midterm years. I don't think that's going to compensate for that fully. But I do think, you know, we're raising the stakes in a high way by having this nomination on the eve of elections. And I broadly think Democrats will do well, but perhaps Republican turnout will be bolstered a bit to counter that in direct or secondary ways.
So turning to you, Jim Kessler, for your take on the politics of these issues and how they're going to play out on the midterms, particularly for the Democrats, particularly in light of the victory of this young woman, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who replaced Joe Crowley, number four in the House of Representatives. Do you read anything into that? And do you see Democrats even more energized given the Supreme Court justice issue, or are they nervous?
Well, you can be energized and nervous at the same time. So I'll go with both on this. Democratic turnout in primary elections thus far, we're almost through the primary season, it's been through the roof. Republican turnout's been pretty high too, but the Democratic turnout has been very, very strong. And, you know, we had this shocker that you're talking about in New York. The thing about this is, for the most part, the Democrats who are winning primaries in states and districts where we have to pick up seats, they're mostly been moderates. So this was a Democratic seat. She ran a spectacular race. But, you know, she had some other advantages that aren't normally advantages. Normally, it's an advantage to be an incumbent. This year, it's an advantage to be an outsider. Normally, it's an advantage to be a man. This year, it's an advantage to be a woman. And normally, it's an advantage to be white in a Democratic primary this year and probably further into the future. And it's an advantage to be non-white. And you add to that that Joe Crowley, I think, forgot about his district. He's a great congressman, but he forgot about his district. And she ran just a spectacular, motivating campaign. But I think Democrats are motivated. I've never seen Democrats this motivated, including moderates. So I still feel that this is going to be a very, very difficult election for Republicans in November, particularly House Republicans.
And you still believe that the Democrats have a very strong chance of taking over the House of Representatives, becoming the majority?
Yes, I believe that the next Speaker of the House will be a Democrat. I have no idea which Democrat, but it'll be a Democrat.
That's a topic for another discussion.
Yes.
That is Nancy Pelosi.
It won't be Joe Crowley.
She's a lightning.
It will not be Joe Crowley.
No, and we don't know. Nancy Pelosi, very effective.
She's very
leader.
Effective and understands power better than anybody in Washington, D.C., so I would never count her out.
But she's a lightning rod for Republicans. Well, let's close by talking about foreign policy. John Fortier, President Trump has been very controversial on a number of domestic issues, as we've discussed. But certainly on foreign policy, we've seen tariffs being imposed on allies, Europeans. They're fighting back, Mexicans, Canadians. We're on the verge of a potential trade war with our own allies, as well as adversaries like China. But he is planning now, after the NATO summit, to meet one-on-one with President Vladimir Putin. Once again, this is very controversial because he seems to want to meet with him one-on-one without anybody else in the room, similar to what he did with Kim Jong-un. This is an adversary. He is telegraphed that he is not as concerned about Russia's invasion and occupation of Crimea, which is really upending the post-World War II order. How do you read this for the United States and its standing in the world?
Well, the Russia issue, of course, is caught up both with domestic and foreign issues. There's an investigation going on of the president, and the country is waiting to hear what happens, also divided about what the merits of that investigation are. And so there are strong feelings, maybe perhaps more than ever, about Russia, which might not usually reach that level. Look, I think the president has been rhetorically open to talking to Russia in many ways. Policy-wise, has actually done some things that are pretty strongly anti-Russia. If it is the case that he really does go, as some are speculating, and concede Crimea to Russia, I think that would be very big news and very a big change in policy that would be unhelpful, and I would find some serious problems with that. But I think at this point, look, I think he believes he's a negotiator, and that on certain issues that this adversary and we have interests that might be in common and might be able to do some things together. We'll just have to see. I mean, I think the other issues you raised about tariffs and the relations with Europe are also extremely frayed. And just to say a couple of quick things. One, this is a very different issue. Immigration has been building the Republican Party for a long time. The trade issue was one that perhaps was held more by congressional Democrats, not necessarily presidents, but congressional Democrats who are more protectionist. Donald Trump has held on to that issue and is pushing forward very strongly. And also the criticisms of European allies for their participation in NATO or lack of funding of their militaries in NATO. That has always been the policy of presidents, but has ratcheted up in a significant way. So those are significant things that are causing some friction with our allies.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, it seems we're at an unprecedented moment, though, despite what John Fortier says, the kind of language that President Trump uses against stalwart allies in Europe, Canada. He reserves the denigrating language for them and, if not praises, does not in any way disparage real adversaries, whether North Korea, Vladimir Putin of Russia, and others. So just playing the devil's advocate, if he does meet with President Putin one-on-one, it looks like just another dictator rewarded with a meeting with the leader of the free world on equal footing without really doing anything concretely to deserve it. I mean, we have not seen Vladimir Putin's Russia stop destabilizing eastern Ukraine, do anything to come out of Crimea, Syria backing Bashar al-Assad to the hilt. I mean, a Republican would easily question, should we reward somebody of that caliber with a meeting? And if we allow Crimea to stand with Putin, is China taking Taiwan next? I mean, again, we have to look at implications of this type of behavior.
Yes, I do not have a charitable view at all of this Trump meeting with Putin. The Russian interference in the United States election is close to an act of war against this country. Those are the words of former Vice President Dick Cheney. Okay, so this is the way we need to think about this. Our current president, Donald Trump, basically pretends that this Russian invasion into our democracy and our way of governing does not exist. So this meeting with Putin, only bad things can happen here. Yes, he is denigrating our allies. He is supporting and helping to prop up dictators who don't share American values and want to basically, I believe, destroy America and destroy Western Europe and wants to destabilize in those areas. And I think our president is helping Putin do these things. So my hope is that we can get through this summit without too much damage to the United States and to the Western alliances. But my other hope is that Republicans in Congress finally stand up to Donald Trump and say no more, because we're now talking about the fate of democracies out there. And the president has been derelict on this.
On that ominous note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, as always, many thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guests. Our engineer was Joe Gill. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.